Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Prepping for Everything podcast with me, your host, Emily. I am so grateful to have half an hour of alone time today. I feel like this is going to be my therapy, sitting here and talking into the microphone, even though we're going to be discussing all things food storage. I'll take it. I will take a break in amongst the hecticness of the day. I don't even know what happened today. It's like the sun comes out and I feel like I need to do everything all at once because realistically we hardly ever get sun here. So when we do, all of the outside jobs need tackled. We started with cleaning the chicken coop, then the door fell off the chicken coop, so that was a whole process trying to get that back on the hinges. The bees have come alive. We have two hives. I don't know what's happening. The hive on the right is so active, kind of worryingly active. There's a lot of bees on the outside. I keep wondering, are they going to swarm? I think we need to add another super. We need to give them more space because now that they're out foraging again, they soon start to fill up those frames pretty quickly. And then the hive on the left is disturbingly quiet. We've got no happy medium here. It's either they're too quiet or they look like they're going to swarm. But I'll keep you updated on that. I don't really know what's going to happen. I got to get in touch with our mentors. This is our second summer keeping bees, so we're still learning a lot. What else has happened? What else has been happening today? Callie, our Cocker Spaniel, I think I mentioned a few weeks ago that she was a little bit ill and we couldn't quite figure out what was going on. Well, it turns out she's been diagnosed with Addison's disease and it's never going to go away. It's a lifelong condition, but she has got this medication that she's got to take every day to manage it. And I just can't believe the difference in her. My 6-year-old, 7-year-old Cocker Spaniel, who I just assumed was starting to slow down. You know, she's getting older, she's mellowed out, she's calm. It was obviously just because she wasn't feeling great and she must have been like this for a few months, but only recently she started going off her food. She didn't want to get off the couch to go for walks. We could just tell that something was really presenting more than what it was before. But now she's taking these tablets and it's like the dog equivalent of happy pills. And she has turned in to this naughty little puppy again. I don't even know how to explain it. It's like she's had an overnight personality switch, bless her. She must be feeling 100 times better. So that's been fun. We've got a really active spaniel again who loves her walks, who loves playing. And don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining. I'm just so grateful that we got to the bottom of what was going on, that we got a diagnosis and that we can progress from here. At least we were understanding what's happening. And on top of everything that's going on, Rosemary has decided that she wants to go down the route of elimination communication. Let me explain a little bit about that. So she's 11 weeks old and I noticed every time that she was getting ready to sort of go to the toilet in her nappy, she was getting really, really fussy and upset. And I was like, what can I do here? What can I help with? So one day I took her nappy off and I was like, right, let's just go and sit on the toilet because, you know, that's like a natural way for humans to go when their knees are up, because when I'm holding her, her knees will be up. I sat right at the back of the toilet. I held her between my arms and my legs so that she wasn't going to fall into the toilet. And she went and she went and she went and she went. So we have been trying this process. It's called elimination communication. It's a process of potty training, but it's not really because she's so young. Like you can't necessarily potty train her at this age, but it's a process of picking up on her cues. Your baby usually makes some kind of signal that they're going to need the toilet. You pick up on that. You respond by taking them to the toilet. And that's been going really well, but my goodness, it's a full-time job. I had read about all of this before ever having a baby and I thought, yep, I definitely want to do that. And then of course we had a baby and everything was so much more overwhelming than I could have ever imagined. So that got put on the back burner and I hadn't actually thought about doing it until, you know, she was maybe 6 months to a year or even longer. It wasn't at the top of the priority list doing all of this, but she seems so much happier. Obviously she's still wearing a nappy. I'm not expecting my 3-month-old to be potty trained, but she's a lot happier. Her bum, like she doesn't have any nappy rash anymore because obviously we're catching things really quickly. And To top off a really hectic week, a really hectic day, this is all that's going on. So I'm happy that I'm getting this 30 minutes in my wardrobe, speaking into the microphone about all things food storage, if I'm honest with you. I'm happy that her dad is home. Will works away during the week, so I am solo parenting, and then he comes home at the weekend and it's like, oh, I can breathe again. Don't get me wrong, I love motherhood, I love Rosemary, but it's a lot sometimes. It can be quite overwhelming. Anyway, I am going to dive into all things food storage today. I'm aware that a lot of you came to my social media for this in particular, and I just want to help some of you get started because it is what I get questions most about. So let's get into it. Hi listeners, are you ready to take your preparedness to the next level? My comprehensive online course is a great place to start. From food storage and preservation to water readiness and bag out bag checklists, I've got you covered. This is more than just presentation screens. I've also added downloadable worksheets, video tutorials, checklists, and loads of prepping content, which is consistently being added to as we generate new ideas. Not to mention, you get to take it in your own time to fit around your lifestyle, and you get lifetime access to the content. And here's the best part. As a valued listener of this show, you get an exclusive 10% discount with code POD10. That's POD10 to enter into the coupon code section at checkout. Don't miss out on this opportunity to level up your preparedness game. Visit the link in the show notes to enroll today, and together we can build a future where we are prepared for whatever life throws our way. I'll see you there. I believe that our food system is under attack, and I think that there's no better time to really focus on food security. Whether that's by growing your own, learning more about it, joining community gardens, reducing your dependence on the system, shortening your supply chain by sourcing locally, by hunting, by fishing, by building a solid food storage. Everything that you can do within your power to take control of the situation at hand. And you're probably wondering why I'm thinking this, and I kind of believe that when your eyes are opened, there's no going back. You start seeing things differently that's unfolding in the world. You start looking at everything that has been sprayed in our foods, all the pesticides, all the chemicals, and now we're wondering why all these diseases are going through the roof. And partly it's probably due to our lifestyle, but partly it's also due to the food that we eat. The food that we eat is not real food anymore. What is it when you turn your food around to look at the label and you cannot pronounce most of those ingredients? Is that even food anymore? Is that really what we want to be consuming? Certainly not me anyway. And don't get me wrong, like I still eat candy. I still eat junk food. I'm not totally consumed by all of this so that I can't go to someone's house and have a glass of tap water. Like I think there is a really strong balance that we need to have in life, because when we go down the wellness too much, it can actually become detrimental to our health because there can be toxins everywhere. At what point do we draw the line? But when it comes to food, I am quite particular about it. Right, let's go past that. Let's go past the ingredients. Who's buying up all the farmland? What are they doing with that farmland? Because they're trying to stop farming, which is absolutely bizarre. Cows' farts are apparently killing the world. Really? Are we going to accept this? I don't want this podcast to turn preachy, but look between the lines and not to just accept everything that you're being spoon-fed by the media. And heck, don't accept everything that I'm saying. This is just my opinion. This is just my personal thoughts on the situation. I'm just a girl sitting in her cupboard speaking into her microphone. I think it's important to question the narrative and to question, why are they trying to stop farmers farming? Why are they trying to find them? Why are farmers all over Europe, and I think the world, the rest of the world as well, protesting against this? Have you seen that? Because they're not showing it in the mainstream media. Farmers are angry, and rightly so, because they're being told not to farm anymore. I personally know somebody who is local to us who has a lot of acreage, and they are being given grants to stop farming animals and start farming this certain type of crop. I cannot remember what crop it is, but they're getting paid a lot of money to take this. It's a really big incentive. And what's going to happen if farmers all over the UK take this incentive? Is there going to be no farm animals anymore? And don't twist my words, I don't like factory farming either. I think this is where there's a really, really big divide between the vegans and the non-vegans. And when we're divided, we're easier to control. We're arguing amongst one another rather than stepping back and seeing the bigger picture. I think that that's what's going on in day-to-day life with absolutely everything that you look at. It's like someone can't have an opinion anymore unless it's a really extreme opinion and unless they're trying to block out the opposing viewpoint. I don't know, it's like there's no form of nuance anymore, but I just want to pose the question, just to put it out there, if they manage to stop all these farmers from farming, what is going to happen? What happens to our food supply? Whether you're a vegan, whether you're a meat eater, what is going to happen? And obviously it's okay for those people that are raising animals or that know how to hunt or that know how to fish, that are partially or fully self-sufficient. It's probably going to be fine, but what happens to the rest of the world that has no idea, the ones that need to go to the grocery store to survive, to have food? Is everyone going to be happy just eating stuff that's grown in a lab? Food that's not real food? Is there even going to be that available? I don't know. I'm just throwing the questions out there. This is exactly where my mind goes. I feel a little bit concerned about the situation. I don't like what they're doing. I don't like how they're twisting the younger generation's minds to view farming in this way, because it can be done in a way that still aligns with nature. It can be done through regenerative agriculture. It can be done on a scale that it does not need to be factory farming and all of these animals crammed into horrific situations. I don't like that. I think that's awful, and even that sort of meat, I don't want to eat, because what have they gone through? I just wish that we could get a balance here that everybody could kind of agree on, but obviously the world is not like that. That's really idealistic of me. There's all of this happening. I feel like our food system is under attack. And hey, if you want to get really conspiratorial, have you ever heard of that Henry Kissinger quote, "Control food and you can control the people"? How does it go? Let's have a look. Control oil and you control nations, control food and you control the people. So yeah, all of that is my roundabout way of letting you know that food storage is at the top of my priority list, and I think it should be at the top of everyone's priority list. Food storage and just taking control of the situation in any way that you can, and that's obviously us just dipping our toes in the water there, whether the government's trying to control the food supplies or poison our food supply or whatever else. But let's bring it back to practical preparedness. Why have a food storage? Obviously so that you can eat. But in the event of what? If you lose your job, if there's a natural disaster, if you're going through any form of financial hardship, if you have a food storage to fall back on, that's one less thing to worry about. There's personally been so many times where our money is a little bit tighter and you see just not having to go to the grocery store every week and do that big food shop. What a difference it makes. And when I speak to you all in my DMs and my messages, the amount of times that having a solid pantry has literally saved you and your kids is crazy. I get messages from people that have gone through divorce, that have split up with people that have just gone through really hard times, whether it was a medical emergency and you couldn't work, or job loss, that's usually pretty high up, and your pantry has sustained you and just really given you that buffer period that you need to get through that time. I've said it once and I'll say it again, I see preparedness and food storage as a physical insurance. You likely have car insurance or house insurance or life insurance. Why not have that physical insurance? Now, how do we do it? How do we build a food storage in a way that it makes sense for you and your family, in a way that it's not going to rot and go off and that you're wasting money? And one of the biggest things that I want you to start with is assessing your own needs. How many people are you building a food storage for? How long of a food storage do you want to be able to sustain your family? Do you want 3 days? Do you want 2 weeks? Do you want 3 months? Do you want to build up to a year? What makes sense to you? Plan it on what you think is most likely to happen. Do you live in Hurricane Alley? Are you likely to be snowed in for a week? For us, where we're moving, it's quite high up. It's in rural Highlands of Scotland. The likelihood of us being snowed in for a long time over winter is actually pretty high. For me, it makes sense to have a solid food storage just for that. And then let's think about what we consistently eat. Do not go out and buy bulk foods that you are not going to eat just because you realize from some preparedness person online that it lasts a long time, because there's some foods that I'm about to throw out that can last like 20 years. white rice, some dried beans, your oats, all of these things, when they are stored properly, can last a really long time. We like to keep them because we eat those sort of things. We eat rice a lot during the week. I have oats most mornings for my breakfast. Store what makes sense to you. And the way that we're going to do it with our dry goods, the way that I recommend building up your long-term food storage, is by having a three-layer system. What that means is having something in your long-term food storage, like oats, for example, that is in a Mylar bag, in probably a bucket to keep rodents and everything else away, have it heat sealed with an oxygen absorber, and that is your bulk goods. You've maybe got 5 kilograms all tucked away, and you don't actually go into that until you need to fill up your medium or your short-term food storage. So you've got your bulk goods in your long-term food storage. Your medium-term food storage is usually something that is replenishing your short-term food storage. So bear with me, I'm throwing out a lot of words here that you might not have heard before. And basically, the way that I do it is my short-term is my working pantry. That is what I'm consistently using for cooking. So if we're going to take rice, for example, white rice, it's probably going to be in a jar. I'm pouring it from the jar into my food, and that's my short term. My medium term is usually a bucket, but it's not got a Mylar bag or anything, and then I use that bucket to replenish the glass jar in my working pantry. Once I run out of both of those, I can then go into my long term, replenish my medium term food storage, and then bulk buy more rice. I know it can be a lot to keep up with, but it's a system of doing things that once you get into the swing of it, it just seems like second nature, and it's so much easier than consistently running out of food, running out of things that you regularly use, having to go to the grocery store in the middle of cooking your dinner. It's just really convenient more than anything, especially for us where we're going to be moving. We're going to be quite rural, and we don't really have the option of just nipping out in the middle of cooking dinner to go to the shops. So we need to be prepared. We need to be organized. And I just want you to think about what you consistently use and what would make sense for you to store. So our dry goods, when we're storing long term, we can store in Mylar bags, but that's only for dry goods. You do not want to store anything with any moisture content in there because it will go rancid. Another thing is freeze dried foods. I think next week we will dive into freeze drying. I get a lot of questions about that and how it compares to dehydrating and everything else. So we'll jump into that next week. But freeze dried food is such an easy way to build out your food storage because it can last a super long time. It holds a lot of your nutrients, and I love it. I've got my freeze dryer going all the time, but we will circle back to that next week. And you don't need a lot of money to build a food storage. You can simply buy an extra can every time you go to the grocery store. Wait until things are on sale. If there's a certain type of flour that you consistently buy for your bread and you see that it's on sale, why not buy one for now and buy one for later? Put one in your pantry, stock up when you're seeing sales. We don't need to go out and spend thousands of pounds on building a food storage. And I think this is where people go wrong, because when you typically stumble upon all of this, you can be a little bit scared and you're wanting a quick fix. You're wanting to spend all of this money and just think, I'll buy 20 years worth of food. And it's not always that easy, because you need to rotate through it to make sure that things aren't going rancid. You need to be buying what your family eats, what you know how to cook. You know, there's no point in buying dried beans when you don't know what to do with them on the other end. Imagine an emergency situation where you've got no water because you haven't built up a water storage, and you have these dried beans and you don't know any recipes of how to use them. My course actually goes into all of this. This is a shameless plug, but it's really, really hard for me to actually totally get into everything in a podcast when I'm not explaining everything to you by video. It dives into what to store, how to store everything to prolong shelf life, keeping bugs and pests out, where to store it, how much to store. We really go into video tutorials on Mylar bags, oxygen absorbers, desiccants, glass and plastic. I give you guides to inventorying and rotation so that nothing goes to waste. I'm showing you how to save money while doing it, learning about the three-layer system and how to implement it. So obviously I touched on it there, but again, it's hard to show you without presentations and videos and really getting into it. We also go into more than just food storage. There's food preservation methods such as canning, fermentation, freezing, dehydrating, and freeze drying, all things water preparedness and purification, and then there's loads of bonus content and discounts throughout. And what I really, really value about this course is that I'm consistently trying to focus on you assessing your own needs and circumstances to tailor this to you. You can go and take a random course online. You can go and listen to any YouTube guru or anything else, and their situation isn't going to be the same as yours. There's no one size fits all when it comes to preparedness and food storage. There's no have this guide and you're going to be set up for life. And sometimes I wish there was, because it would make my life and your life easier if you could just buy everything on this list and you are set for life. But it's not like that. Life isn't black and white. Food storage isn't black and white. And we need to make sure that it's working for you and your family, because you're going to be the ones eating this food storage. So I'm only going to mention it one more time. I hate the thought of this podcast becoming really salesy and pushing you into something that you either don't want or can't afford at the moment. But if you do want to take my course, I can guarantee that you will learn something from it, and it will assist you in building your own family's food storage and just taking your prepping to the next level. And again, as a listener of this show, you can get a 10% discount with code POD10, that's POD10 at checkout. I will leave all the details in the show notes below this episode. Anyway, I actually think that I am going to need to start scripting these podcasts rather than just sitting and rambling away for half an hour, because I've really struggled to stay on track. And quite often after I edit all and put it out to the world, I think, oh my goodness, I forgot to mention this and I forgot to mention this. And this is where listener questions are actually really valuable for me and everybody listening, because you ask me a lot of questions that I often just skim over completely. So let's get into all your questions about food storage right now. Joe asks, if I live in a small place, can I still store food? Yes, you can store food. It's going to look different depending on your situation. No two situations are going to be the same. I know that I just sound like a broken record this episode and every other episode, but you can prep and you can build a food storage no matter where you live. If you live in an apartment, it's just going to look different. We need to come up with storage solutions. And actually, one that I really like is if you have luggage. So if you have a suitcase anywhere, if you have bags that you aren't using, then put some food storage in that, because that's taking up empty space, probably in the top of your wardrobe or under your bed or something anyway. So put some long-term food storage or water storage in there, and then it's out of sight. It's usually in a cool, dark place when it's in these sort of places. And that's just one tiny little tip that you can use. Another thing is you could build shelving. You can just make the most of kind of each space that you have in your kitchen. If you have any space above your cupboards, put some wicker baskets up there. There's always ways of doing things. And I hate clutter. I hate things looking messy. If you can put it in the likes of a wicker basket, it still looks really nice and no one knows that your food storage is there. Next question. Rachel asks, can you dive into more of what to store that isn't food? Yes, I can. So again, what do you consistently use? I know I speak about food storage all the time, but what I really mean is, what are you using in your day-to-day life that you can't really go without, or that you could go without, but you don't want to? Because it's not all about the worst case scenario here. If you still want to have a mascara, then keep some reserves of your favorite mascara. This isn't all about doomsday, guys. I think if you're opening your cupboards, have a look at your cleaning products, have a look at your toothpaste and toothbrushes, and think about all of these things that you are using on a day-to-day basis, and maybe try and just buy a couple extra. So what I like to do personally, if I'm using the likes of I've got this natural deodorant that I really like. So I like to keep four of them. Yep, believe it or not, I like to have one that I'm using and then another three as a reserve. And then when I'm finished that one that I'm using, I buy another one for the back so that nothing's ever expiring or going to waste, but I've always got what I need. And that can seem overwhelming when you've got to do this for your whole household. But I would just say pick the things that are most important to you. What are you using every day? If it's a toothpaste and a toothbrush, why not get a couple more of those? If it's your favorite kitchen cleaner, why not get a couple more of those? Don't see it as I need to revamp my whole house and find space for an extra four things of absolutely everything, because it doesn't need to be like that. It just needs to work for you. Whatever you want to prioritize. I hope that's not too overwhelming. Holly says, supply chain and full tragedy in US today. Things to stock up on now before we feel it. Oh my goodness, that was absolutely awful. I saw the video of that and my heart just goes out to anyone affected by the Baltimore bridge collapse. Things to stock up on are the things that I always recommend stocking up on. Food, water, first aid supplies, just the things that you normally use and need. I repeat myself time and time again, but I think we just overcomplicate preparedness so much. You could keep a little bit of extra reserves of fuel at home as well, and just make sure that you're as prepared as you possibly can be. I think all the time that we can stock up on things, and preparedness quite often is that's what it comes down to, but it's so much more. It's about your mindset, it's about your skill set, and we can do all this preparing and we can end up on a bridge that collapses, and then what happens? It's just unbearable to think about, and it really shakes me when something like this happens. But there's been a lot of great preparedness advice that's been floating around since this. And from the pieces of information that I've picked up over the past week is that if your car does go off a bridge, it's likely that your airbags are going to go off. So that's something to watch out for. The impact of you actually hitting the water can be pretty severe. Next is to keep a window smasher or a seatbelt cutter. You can get these tools that are both in one in your car. And I don't just mean floating about somewhere in your car, because if you need it in an emergency situation, it's unlikely that you're going to be able to get it if it's not securely fixed to your car. So Will actually screwed one into the side of my car. It's kind of near the center console, and that will stay put. If your car is rolling or toppling, you can still reach down and grab that from the secure fixture that it's on, but somewhere that's going to be easy for you to grab when you need it. And you might need to cut your seatbelt off if you're dangling or anything like that. If you need to smash the window and you don't have something to smash the window, you can remove your headrest and do that. If your car is submerging, it's likely that the engine's going to be heavy and it's going to be going nose first. There's going to be an air bubble forming at the back of the car. So if you can, make your way to the back of the car and smash through the back of it. And then, of course, once you get out of the car, the water is likely to be freezing. So it's just a case of trying to get out of the water as quickly as possible. And I don't want to downplay this. I don't want to make it seem like it's that easy. Your car goes into the water and you're just going to magically manage to escape. But I think some of the advice I have seen through social media recently has just been really, really helpful and beneficial in times that we need it. Okay, I'm going to take one last question, and it's from Fiona, and I really like this question. She asks, how do you overcome people thinking you are overreacting by prepping? I want to start, but hard to get hubby on board, and no family will say I'm overreacting as they think everything is conspiracy. And my answer is don't. Don't bother. I think people are going to meet you where they're at, and if they're not ready to listen to your practical preparedness, then don't involve them. I know it's easier said than done. With the likes of your husband, you're a team. You've got to be on, I was about to say on the same page, but you don't need to be on the same page. You just need to be understanding of one another. And I think when you come to preparedness in such a practical way, and from the point of view that you're just looking after your family if you lose your job, if your little one gets an injury, you want to know how to treat it, if fill in the blank, then it's a lot easier for other people to understand. If we jump down the rabbit hole and try and drag anyone down with us that is not ready to go there, you're probably just going to put them even further away from the point that you're trying to make, right? It's funny because Will kind of couldn't care less about preparedness, and the more that he was seeing it play out in a really helpful way day to day, the more he understood it. So I say that he couldn't care less about it, but he was always supportive of me. He always let me do my thing, but I guess he didn't really understand it until he needed to. And then it's like simple little things, like he'll be fixing something and looking for a WD-40, and I'll be like, oh, I've got a few of those in the garage, and he's like, what? And I think tiny little moments like this, where it's been really helpful for him to have a prepared wife. I'm not on my high horse, I'm not trying to boast. And I think with family members especially, or anyone that isn't there, then there's no point in wasting your time and energy trying to make people see what you're seeing. I spent so many years like that, and you're just going to end up exhausted because people are probably going to view you as crazy, and that's okay. It doesn't matter how anyone else views you. At the end of the day, you are looking after your family. You're doing the best that you can. And the likelihood is you're probably doing better than anyone else that is refusing to see what is going on and what is unfolding as plain as day in front of them. So thank you for your question. Keep your head down, keep prepping, and yeah, just keep looking after your family. And I know that I said that was my last question, but I've just got to quickly address this one. Kat asked, why do you never answer my questions? And I'm sorry, there's only a certain amount that I can answer on this podcast at the end without making it super long or dragged out, or unless I do a completely separate listener questions episode. I'm never purposely ignoring anyone's questions, I promise. I just randomly scroll through while I'm sitting here and pick out any that just catch my eye straight away. So please, if you've asked questions and you're wanting an answer, please just keep asking them, because I'm not trying to ignore you. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to gatekeep or withhold information. It's just, yeah, whatever I see at the time, because like I said, I don't script this podcast. I sit here and answer them in real time. But maybe we will do another episode that is just listener questions. I'm just trying to gauge what you guys want to hear, what's going to be helpful for you. And I don't even know if this episode was helpful, because I feel like I sat here and really rambled. But next week I'm going to have it a little bit more scripted. So bear with me. I'm on this learning journey of the podcasting as well. If you've made it this far, thank you for being here. You're an OG listener and I appreciate you so much. If you have a question, please head over to my Instagram, Prepping for Everything, or you can email me directly at preppingforeverything@gmail.com and I will get back to you on there. I hope you have a great week, and I will talk to you next Wednesday.